brother. What's up?
This is a good recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, stop right on.
Good morning and welcome to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Good morning, G. Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Earl. You know, that weekend flew by, but I'm doing good. How are you?
All right. Did you get some rest?
I did.
Yeah, man. And you should love what's coming up.
Yeah, what's that?
80s, 85, 90s from throughout the entire week. Sunshiny.
That's too hot for me. Hopefully it's not too humid.
Hey, Sandy.
Well, he's got a real precise comfort zone. What is it, Kelvin? 73 degrees and a 42% humidity?
That's definitely ideal, but I mean, I'd rather have it be 50 than 85.
What does 85 is not too bad, Kelvin.
Yeah. And it's not too bad, but yeah, I'm not a big heat guy.
What is he asking for, San Diego?
No, that sounds more like Seattle.
Oh, Seattle. Yeah. And by now, if you don't know who that is, that's none other than Sandy Williams. Yeah. What day is this?
I know, Monday. I misplaced it. This is not a calendar error. We decided I'd do today to come in as well.
Yeah, so let me do this. We've got a lot to talk about. I want to begin by, if you're not aware, this past weekend was pretty eye-opening for me. I was probably at least talked about or mentioned on every news outlet that there is, Sandy, because of my interview with President Biden.
Yeah, I kept standing up saying, I know that man. I know that guy. Yeah.
And so what started off as a blessing turned into actually understanding what politics, Sandy, is all about. And so it turned from, you know, having the opportunity to interview the president of the United States to me being vilified as a person who, you know, was used by the White House and by President Joe Biden. And, you know, even this morning, as I was, you know, preparing for the show, even locally here, conservative talk show, vilified me as, you know, somebody who is nothing more than a sponge to be used. But anybody who knows me knows that's not the case. That's not the truth. And so I just wanted to let people know that, you know, I built my reputation long before I came to radio, being an honest and forthright person. And I've lived my life in that manner. And it doesn't matter that people on these news outlets, Sandy, wanted to attempt to slander me. I am who I am. Oh, was that Popeye? I am what I am.
Yeah.
And that's all that I am.
Yeah, and you put the spinach, put that spinach away, Earl.
So, Sandy, you know, your thoughts.
Well, you know, the White House was obviously on a serious effort at damage control after the debate. Reached out to a couple of different people and gave them an opportunity to have a kind of a news breaking kind of an event, the first interviews of Joe Biden after the debate failure, and you know they sent out questions for people to be asked, you know, and it seemed in the nature of that process that the White House was saying, you know, you can do this, but ask these questions, and so the questions were asked, and you know, I think that lots of interviews end up being softball interviews, okay? So, I mean, this was nothing different than that kind of an event, a softball interview. And usually, in fact, interviewers are done by very sympathetic interviewers, right? So Fox News when they interviewed Donald Trump, it's not a hostile interview for by a long shot. And so this ended up being a non-hostile interview. I'm not sure how well Joe Biden did in it, actually. This is unfortunately the way politics works. The White House, whether it be Donald Trump or Joe Biden, want to provide access to the White House under the condition that you're going to be a sympathetic person when we give you access. And that's kind of the way the keys to the domain have been served up. And so, you know, unfortunately, I think for Joe Biden, they found out that, number one, you're truthful, asked the question, you answered. Yep, they gave me the questions, as did the woman in Philadelphia. And, you know, the White House has had to do some retrenching on this. So, you know, I don't think this is anything more than a black eye for them, not for you.
Well, so thank you very much for that, Sandy. And we're going to move on because we've got a great show lined up for you this morning. And I can tell you without any hesitation that the reason I invited Sandy on today, he's going to join me as well tomorrow, and this entire week, today, Tuesday, and Friday, we're going to do exactly what people have asked of us. And we're going to take on the meaning of Project 2025. And so, you know, I just think that before we get into it, and our phone lines are going to be open as always at 844. Oh, here he is. All right. Mr. Morris Pearl of the Patriotic Millionaires has just joined us. Good morning, Mr. Morris Pearl. How you doing, sir?
Good morning. Sorry about the delay. We had a technical difficulty briefly here.
Well, that's all right. It is good to see you. It is the, every other Monday, and so it's so great to have you on board. I'm joined by my co-host, Sandy Williams. Sandy Williams, this is Mr. Morris Pearl of the Patriotic Millionaire.
Well, I've listened to you prior, Morris, and great to meet you.
Glad to meet you guys, too. Thank you.
All right. So Morris, today's topic, money in politics and political influence of the rich. If ever there was a timely time for this conversation, it is now. You say what, sir?
It's like it's not right that people with money have more influence than other people. Like, I remember, people in the news media were asking me about, you know, what I think about whether President Biden should run again and, you know, whether donors should speak up. And my answer is, like, there's no reason why I should have more influence over that decision than anybody else. It's like, I'm one person. I'm not an expert. You know, there's no, it's like, If somehow donors feeling one way or the other makes a difference, that's a problem, because it's not appropriate. It's not democratic that donors have more influence over politics than everyone else does. That's my reaction.
Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, no, obviously. There are people, large donors, I suppose, who might be giving money who would have an influence to the extent that they would say they weren't going to donate money, which is part of the problem in politics today, right? That the money talks and money has influence. So, I think you're absolutely right, though. The decision that Joe Biden has to make has everything to do with what impact voters have, and that's everybody.
And, the fact that politicians spend so much of their time talking to people like me, people from all over the country, you know, come to New York, and I go, oh, so-and-so would like to have lunch with you or meet you or come to your office. And I'm not voting in their district 1,000 miles away. And I know that they really want to make, you know, to get some donations. But the idea that I somehow know more about politics or whatever in their districts is just absurd. But after a while, they start, oh, and we want to thank you for your judgment and your wisdom and for your help and assistance. And after a while, people start to believe it. And the major donors, after a while, they start to believe, oh, we really are smarter and we really are experts and people should listen to us. And it's just insanity.
So Morris, for every donor such as yourself who has a compass, a moral compass, you know, there's got to be hundreds who don't see it that way. And that's why we're at this precipice that we are at right now, where politicians are not, even though they can't be in the position that they're in, sir, to be able to solicit money from you guys, they forget that the people who put them there, they forget about what we put them there for.
After a while, I think you're right. They do forget. They spent all of their time in those little phone booths at 430 South Capitol Street in Washington, making call after call. And after a while, they know everything there is to know about what I think about all kinds of topics. And they don't have time to talk to you, or maybe they do have time to talk to you to be in your radio show, but they don't have time to talk to all the rest of the people in their district. You're right. I mean, it's not the way it should be.
Well, and it's both Democrat and Republican. And so when it comes to the fact that all of this money, how can the average citizen even think about competing with and the bottom line then becomes personal with the elected official, because their goal is certainly to stay elected, not to do what they can in those early years that they're elected to, you know, do the bidding and the will of the people.
They can change the rules. Like we have here in New York, we have campaign finance reform. Donors get small amounts of money, they get matched.
All right. 844-967-2789 is the number. I'm joined by Mr. Morris Pearl of the Patriotic Millionaires on a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. Welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I am honored and privileged once again to have Mr. Morris Pearl of the Patriotic Millionaires join us on these airwaves. We're talking about money in politics and political influence of the rich. Morris, I have a caller who wants to interact with you. Is it all right?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Tom from L.A. Tom, go ahead quickly.
Thank you, Earl. Sir, thank you for being on the show. I've followed you guys for years. Can you talk about First National Bank versus Bilotti, Buckley versus Vallejo, and Citizens United? Because these are the conservative Supreme Court decisions that have caused for this influx of unlimited money into our political system. Also, 94% of every election is won by the person that spends the most money. The system is corrupt. The system needs to be fixed. And I hope that you guys in the Patriotic Millionaires Club will do everything you can to get either with getmoneyout.com or get with movetoamend.org and do what you can to change the laws, because honestly, we don't have the power.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Morris, you want to respond?
Yes, sir. We do. One of the things that we like to do is impose a system like we have here in New York City over the whole country. Here in New York, instead of getting $1,000 donations if you want to run for mayor, what you need to do is get a whole bunch of people to donate like $100. And then you get matching funds from the election, from the Campaign Finance Commission, of like 8 to 1. I mean, I'm not sure the exact details, but it's something like that. So you have to get a lot of small donations, not the fewer larger donations as had been the case in the past. And we've had some pretty progressive politicians here in New York City elected to local office because of that. That was part of HR 1, you know, in the previous Congress when Nancy Pelosi was Speaker. And I think it's possible we could get something like that for the U.S. Congress, the U.S. Senate, and other things. And yeah, those Supreme Court decisions have basically outlawed every attempt Congress has made over the years to control campaign spending and the influence of money in politics. And I think they're basically going back to the, you know, 18th century and saying, oh, back then only rich people could vote. And, you know, rich people had so much influence. They, you know, published pamphlets and did all kinds of stuff. And that's how America was meant to be, with rich people having more control over politics. And I think we have to fight against that. And we have to have some new laws and make it clear that we're going to have laws to do something about the influence of money in politics. I want to get big money out of politics. I always say, especially my money.
So let me ask you, because, you know, we're asking people who help create this change to now go back and change it. The citizenry doesn't have the power to do it. And so now we're asking the people who are benefiting from this to all of a sudden change it, you know, for the benefit of the people who don't, you know, who don't have a voice in it.
Well, the citizenry does have the power to change it. If the citizens all insist on voting for people who want to change it, it'll be changed. Unfortunately, a lot of citizens believe that rich people should have some special deference or something. A lot of people, you know, have watched The Apprentice show years ago and say, yeah, that's how it should be. We should have more privileges for the rich and famous and celebrities and stuff like that. And that's how they vote. But if people look and they vote for those candidates, oh, I'm not taking any PAC money. I'm not taking corporate money. I'm not taking big donations. I'm not taking money from lobbyists. If they only vote for those politicians, things will change. So the people do have the power to change it if they use that power through their votes, if they believe that's their issue and that's what they want to vote on. And I believe they will.
I suspect, Morris, that the caller, Tom, would then say, well, what can the people like you with means do to help organize those people to do those things? Because one of the problems today is that we don't have a lot of political organization other than that's been led by people with money. And money seems to talk both politically, but it also seems to control news media and social media. And so how do we get leadership, and how do we get the process in place to get people to make that distinction about their candidates?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're right. That's why we're running the Patriotic Millionaires. We have hundreds of rich people from around the country who believe the same thing that you and our caller believe, that we need to get money out of politics. And we're trying. There are organizations like the ones the caller mentioned, like End Citizens United that we work with sometimes. You know, a lot of progressive organizations believe that it's very few people's number one priority. You know, if you ask people what the priorities are, you know, maybe, you know, not having guns in schools or the right to abortion or something will be higher on the list than campaign finance reform.
But I believe that if we get campaign finance reform, that'll go a long ways towards getting all the other things that we want to get.
You know, Morris, it's an uphill climb because what has happened because of Citizens United has tightened the noose around the American people. And so they struggle even more so to survive in this country. And so they don't have the time or the understanding of what took place. And so they're being fed some things that aren't true because they don't have the time to dig into what transpired.
Well, that's why we need you, Earl, and people to listen to your radio show and people to, like you, to keep working. That's why I'm talking to you, so that we can spread the word, both in Wisconsin and in the rest of the country, that there are political leaders who are trying to do something about this. And I mean, I choose to be optimistic. I'm working with staff people who are younger than my own kids, you know, who are now all in their 30s. And I'm trying to do something about it. And I choose to be optimistic, and I choose to believe that we will someday turn things around.
You know, Morris, it's always great talking to you. And, you know, the fact that there are people who are conscious enough and concerned enough about what's in the best interest of the American people, all of us, right? Yeah, it has to be what's in the best interest of all the American people.
Thank you, Earl.
Thank you. Thank you as always. It's always great to have Morris Pearl and the Patriotic Millionaires on. When we return, we are going to get into Project 2025 and what is going to be transpiring with none other than my co-host Sandy Williams. You're tuning into a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. Welcome back to a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. And as promised, today I'm joined by my co-host Sandy Williams. We're going to talk about, for the next couple days, today, tomorrow, and Friday, the show is going to be dedicated to Project 2025, understanding what that is. Sandy's going to do, you know, what Sandy does in his eloquent way of pointing out exactly what's taking place. We've been asked to do this by many in the audience, so we're going to be doing it. Let me read a couple paragraphs to kind of set the stage, and then Sandy will take over. About Project 2025, building now for a conservative victory through policy, personnel, and training. The actions of liberal politicians in Washington have created a desperate need and unique opportunity for conservatives to start undoing the damage the left has wrought and build a better country for all Americans in 2025. It is not enough for conservatives to win elections. If we are going to rescue the country from the grip of the radical left, we need both a governing agenda and the right people in place ready to carry this agenda out on day one of the next conservative administration. This is the goal of 2025 Presidential Transition Project. The project will build on four pillars, that will effectively pave the way for an effective conservative administration, a policy agenda, personnel, training, and a 180-day playbook. The project is the effort of a broad coalition of conservative organizations that have come together to ensure a successful administration begins in 2025. With the right conservative policy recommendations and properly vetted and trained personnel to implement them, we will take back our government. The 2025 Presidential Transition Project is being organized by the Heritage Foundation and builds off Heritage's longstanding mandate for leadership, which has been highly influential for presidential administration since the Reagan era. Most recently, the Trump administration relied heavily on Heritage's mandate for policy guidance, embracing nearly two-thirds of Heritage's proposals within just 1 year in office. Paul Danes, former chief of staff at the Office of Personnel Management during the Trump administration, serves as the director of the 2025 Presidential Transition Project. Spencer Crittenden, former special assistant to the president and associate director of presidential personnel, serves as the associate director of the project. Sandy, I turn it over to you.
Well, I tell you, we talked about this, and I had read press articles summarizing what was in it. I had read sort of third-party kind of analysis of it. But to do this, I thought, well, I've got to read it myself. So over the weekend, I spent a lot of time. This is a 900-page manifesto. The frightening thing about it, and I would urge readers to read at least the forward portion of it, the introduction, is the tenor of it. It's frighteningly ideological. It reads like a manifesto. You know, we had the Das Kapital, the Communist Manifesto. It reads like something the Mein Kampf. I mean, it's so ideologically based that it's frightening. And I can give you some quotes from that to kind of let you. And furthermore, what it doesn't have in it is also concerning. We talk on this show about the concerns that Tom, Dick, and Mary have, the middle class family, their budget, you know, how they make ends meet, how they meet the challenges from day to day. And this document is entirely premised on something else, which is a cultural war. It's a cultural / ideological war, but the ideological war is at its heart, I think, cultural. And so, you know, they start in the beginning and they talk about how the federal government is weaponized against American citizens and conservative values with freedom and liberty under siege. They don't talk about how that's the case, other than when they get into discussion about how they think the family is under assault. And they don't describe that either, other than being worried, terribly worried about the proliferation of LGBTQ, the
LGBTQ
rights, and the kinds of things that are part of the cultural war, but not something that impact Tom, Dick, and Mary in any sort of direct and day-to-day fashion, other than Tom, Dick, and Mary each probably having relatives who fall within the ambit of those who are under assault with respect to this particular document. So they talk about how low-income communities are drowning in addiction and government dependence. They talk about the totalitarian cult known today as the Great Awakening. Okay, they talk about how having a strong government, is an attempt to subvert families.
Sandy,
without describing why that is.
Before you go any further, what is the Great Awakening? What are they referring to?
This is just the kind of in a polemic you try to come up with catchy phrases, things that the public can grab a hold of. They're obviously referring to wokeness. And they're talking about how the totalitarian cult today is made up of those who are part of this Great Awakening. How clever. How clever. How very clever. They want to restore government to its constitutionally intended size. Well, I don't know where in the Constitution they're finding the basis for just what size that should be. They're worried about, very worried about the administrative state and the deep state. They believe, however, that the reason they're worried about it is they think government employees are from the left, okay? And they say this. They describe leftist power as being resident in the government, in the media, in academy, meaning in universities, and in corporate and political elites. So they're trying to define their enemy, the left, and they define it in these broad generic terms as if these people who occupy these various stations around the country all are part of a leftist power conspiracy. They talk about how the pursuit of absolute power in the holy water of the environmental virtue, okay? So they're very much worried about the notion that global warming is something that needs to be tended to. And they would describe that what's happening is that government is trying to wrap itself in the virtue of environmental protection as a way to obtain absolute power. And then they talk about how this danger needs to be dismantled. And they say, we solve this not by trimming and reshaping the leaves, but by ripping out the trees, root and branch. Okay? They're talking about a revolution. Now, you know, this whole thing is couched in this kind of very immediate, time-sensitive, emergent kind of problem. Who is it that doesn't like America? Who is it that thinks America is great? Is it this group of people who want to have a revolution to actually change the very underpinnings of the country? They describe liberty. They say liberty is the pursuit of blessedness. I'm not sure exactly what that means, but it smacks of a religious kind of a goal. They talk about a fictional socialist USA. The straw man they create is a socialist, left-leaning United States, which needs to be dismantled, and it needs to happen quickly. Because here's what they say in the introduction. Conservatives have just 2 years and one shot to get this right. With enemies at home and abroad, there is no margin for error. If we fail, the fight for the very idea of America may be lost. And then they say, we know who we are fighting and what we are fighting for our republic, our freedom, and for each other. I mean, this is the kind of polemic that is used to incite people to revolution. And then, interestingly, ironically, and I can't believe they're now referring to if Donald Trump were to take the reins, they say, if a conservative administration does not respect the Constitution, no administration will. Now, that's a very pessimistic view of who will respect the Constitution, because we just had a conservative administration, and they did not respect the Constitution. So, you know, I think that the introduction to this is what is most unsettling. And then when you read the text, you know, they go through the government department by department, and they talk about specific plans they have for each department. And some of the plans are, some of the many pages in this thing are spent on simply describing the government and the various offices of the government, the office of the president, the offices in the Department of State, in the Department of Defense, in the Justice Department. And these are three of the agencies that they have a great deal of focus on. The Department of Justice is a primary area of focus. The presidential office is a primary area of focus. The environmental protection area, a primary area of focus. There are some that are clearly sort of just a need. They've included it as a need to be complete. So, for instance, the Department of Housing. They have Ben Carson write something, and he demonstrates once again his intellectual laziness. He writes about five pages, and I can sum it up in about two sentences. He says, you should erase everything that Joe Biden has done to the Department of Housing, and you should reenact everything that Donald Trump did under his watch.
So Sandy, take a breath. Phone lines are lit up as we knew it they would be. I want to go quickly first to CJ. CJ, you're up. You say what?
Good morning, Earl and Sandy. You won't keep me very long because you won't ever let me respond to Sandy's response.
No. this is about Project 2025. Do you have anything to say about that?
Yeah, it's a distraction. It's what your party and you're going to have to do because you know you're losing this election.
CJ, just one, because I've seen in the press Donald Trump has sort of backed off from it and said, yeah, I don't have anything to do with Project 2025. Except all you need to look at is the authors of Project 2025 and the positions they held in the Trump White House. Or if you read the document, and I'm confident maybe you haven't yet, I don't think many people will, although one of the things that the thing says in its preamble is that they expect that the, let me read this, they say, they expect that the eyes of the, one set of eyes reading these passages will be the 47th president of the U.S., want to bet? But the authors of this are almost all of them, directly connected to the prior Trump administration, and much of the document is both a defense of the prior Trump administration and a suggestion of all of the Trump initiatives that ought to be reinstated.
So, CJ, you say this is much ado about nothing, right?
Well, I think a lot of it is somewhat factual. You brought up Ben Carson. You tried to summarize it in two sentences, but why don't you go, let's look at the housing record under this president, and instead of deflecting and going back to the previous president.
Hey, CJ, you're doing the deflecting. Thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789 is the number. You know, if you're just joining us and Sandy Williams is here on Monday, it's because today, tomorrow, and Friday, Sandy is going to give a synopsis on Project 2025. You know, you can join us. It's a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. Welcome back to Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's a special Monday because I'm joined by my co-host, Sandy Williams, who today, tomorrow, and Friday, we're going to use the entire hours of the show to unpack the Project 2025. So many of you, many text messages, phone lines are jammed. Sandy, let's go quickly to the phone lines before we let you. And so you said that what you're going to do today is what?
Well, I think today we'll talk about this thing more generally, and we can get into the weeds maybe in the second hour a little bit. The document does get pretty deep into the weeds in a variety. It goes through all of the departments of government and suggests all of the changes that they want to make, many of them quite radical. I can say that in summary, the primary thing they want to do is purge each of the departments of as many of its personnel, its professional personnel as possible, and to replace them with political loyalists, and to make sure that presidential policy gets deeply embedded into every agency. And my question to them is, how will the rest of the world and how will the American public like a roller coaster of policies as we move from a Democratic to a Republican administration, and we have each of those presidents dipping deep into all sorts of policies, shifting direction? I don't think foreign policy can tolerate that kind of volatility, and I don't think the American public can either. I think we need a steady hand at the wheel, and we need to be in a ship that sails smoothly.
All right, let's go to Mike from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Mike. You're first up. You say what, sir?
Happy Motown Monday is the first thing I want to tell you.
All right, all right.
Hey, thanks for taking my call as always, and I'm very proud of what you've done and what you're doing. Keep on doing the good work and getting those phone calls from presidents. When we're talking about Project 2025, you know, I was trying to find a way to describe it as well. And the best thing that I could come up with is it's a blueprint for a new kind of government. And I think, Sandy, you'd have to agree with that, right? But what I'm concerned about the most is, you know, when we're talking about groups, nonprofits like the Heritage Foundation, what group has had more influence on American policy in the last 40 or 50 years than Heritage, right? And here's a case to where they're coming up with this blueprint to take over the United States government. They're not defending it in any debate format. Matter of fact, they dodge it at every opportunity. So they're not being accountable to it. But it tells me that a lot of these nonprofits and nonprofit status that is allowed to exist to create these cesspools of crap that we the peeps have to tolerate, you know, this has gone way, way, way too far. And if we were to regulate the nonprofits, to make them accountable, maybe, you know, we'd have a better chance at deciphering, you know, a fact from fiction. It just seems to me, guys, that this Project 2025 is the most visual plan that, you know, what's happening, you know, in the future for America that we've seen in a generation. And it doesn't look good. So those of us that have taken our vows to defend the Constitution and defend America against all enemies, foreign or domestic, this is a really, really big deal. So I thank you very much for taking the time. I'm looking forward to scrutinizing every part of this. I have not read it. I've scanned over it, and quite frankly, it scares the hell out of me.
Hey, Mike, thank you very much for the call. Sandy, you want to respond to anything?
Well, reading it in depth is even scarier. So because it's a very willfully prepared document that intends to create, as you said, a blueprint for a totally different form of government. And it's one really designed to destroy the federal government and to make it as small as possible and to put as much power in the hands of a president. The thing is premised on the notion that the president will be an intelligent, benevolent leader who won't overexercise his presidential power or her presidential power and will be careful and reliant on the capabilities of those who remain in government. It describes the kind of president that Donald Trump could not possibly be, okay? It describes a president that is unlikely to remain that sort of person when they turn as much power over to the president as they do. I mean, benevolent dictators are few and far between. And what is intended here is to create a patchwork of regulations that would be carried out by states. And let me tell you that in the circumstances in my personal history, I was early in my career an environmental lawyer and understand clearly, and I was an environmental lawyer on the corporate side, but on a corporate side that was willing and enthusiastic to participate in environmental improvements so long as they were carried out equitably by all of their competitors. But environmental law regulated by the states was a race to the bottom. It was a race to be as attractive to corporations as possible. And that's why many paper companies and others moved to the South, okay, early on. It was to move to a regulatory environment that was more attractive to the corporation, not to the people. And so, you know, having regulation at the federal level has become an important premise. Otherwise, you end up with a race to the bottom in almost every category of regulation.
So guys, hang on the phone lines. 844-967-2789 is the number. Very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. My co-host Sandy Williams is here to explain what is happening under Project 2025. He'll be back on tomorrow and Friday, as well as all 3 days will be dedicated to understanding what Project 2025 is. On a Motown Monday on the Earl Ingram Show, 540 AM WAUK here in Waukesha.